Welcome to episode 18 of Transform Together, the Holisticon podcast meetup. I'm Johannes Schato, and today I'm talking to Nancy White. Nancy White is an internationally recognized facilitator, consultant, and founder of Full Circle Associates. For more than three decades, she has worked at the intersection of collaboration, learning, technology, and communities of practice, helping groups make progress on complex challenges. She's the co-author of Digital Habitats and, together with Keith McCandless, the New Liberating Structures Fieldbook. Her work pays particular attention to participatory facilitation, distributed communities, and collaborative approaches to strategy development. Nancy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Johannes. And this is fun because you've chosen a topic that is near and dear to my heart. So I can't wait to get started.
I was dying to get you on the show just because I feel like we have so much overlap and we actually never talked about this. And this, I always take the chance to talk about it publicly, so maybe other people benefit from this as well. So do you want to dive into it?
Sure, go for it.
Maybe to get people introduced to the topic, how would you say strategy is typically created, and how does your approach differ, or maybe our approach that we might find out we have in common?
Well, I was watering the garden this morning, I was thinking about, you know, people say, let's do strategic planning, what the heck they actually mean. And in my experience, it is often about leaders wanting a plan that they can say is done and bought into. And often leaders come in with a sense of what they want the plan to be, but want to include everyone, good intentions. So it's about, will you come in and believe in the plan that I put before you? I'm not sure it is really about tapping the intelligence of the community, the organization, the team, to figure out what to do and what to do next to get there. So I think the first thing is really challenging ourselves to ask ourselves when we begin a strategic planning, quote unquote, process, what it is we really are, what our purpose is. And I think that's true about the step for strategic planning. What is your purpose? Why does this matter? And I think business practices particularly have just absorbed strategic planning as something that has to be done. If you're working in the nonprofit world, it's something the funders require. If you're working in the government, it's something the accountability requires, that it's just something to be gotten through. And rarely is there the breath of life between the process of developing a plan and the process of executing on a plan. I think that's the first big tension. How is it that we can want to have a strategic plan and we're not strategic at the same time, you know? I think the second piece is the gap between bringing a plan to life and having a plan. And that is more work than most people want to do. They want to go get their thing done, right? So I think it requires a shift in the way we operate. And I don't know if you've read the work of Bev and Etienne Wenger Trainer and their work around learning to make a difference. And it came out of originally out of Etienne's work with communities of practice. But Bev and Etienne have developed what they call a value creation framework. And when I think about strategic planning now, I think about how do we get ourselves engaged in strategic planning? How do we do it? How does it have value? Ooh, how does it have value? And what Bev and Etienne have brought to the table is thinking about value creation from the very light, immediate things. So for me, an immediate piece of value that you created in your introduction was you named that we have an overlap in our practice and that you notice that we really haven't talked about it in a long time. And that's a real sweet spot. So what happens to me when you notice that value? I notice that value. And the next thing, when should I talk to Johannes again? Johannes should talk to so-and-so. Immediately it transforms from a moment when something happened to creating some little nugget of value. And then let's say we decide to do something next and that value might begin to be operationalized. And then we figure out how to make it better. And pretty soon, we're creating a higher level of value, and we are moving towards a higher order goal. And the higher order goal, I'll circle back to later, is something that really comes out in the field book. But Bev and Etienne's Vebenet Tien's theory is that if you don't notice the little things, you won't get to the big things. And it's the ability to notice and adapt what you do as you notice and as you build this value. So the approach to strategic planning now that has become kind of the way I live and breathe strategic planning, first of all, it calls out the need to be understand why we're doing strategic planning, what value we're trying to create, and then structuring it in little chunks so that we can stop and notice what we're learning, what value we're creating, and we can iterate and continue to build value or say, oops, we need to pivot. And today, you know, I hate to even use the word pivot because it's been beat to death, but the rate of change right now is just mind-numbing. And if we can't stop and notice, we could misalign, we can shoot off in a non-productive direction. We could shoot off in a productive direction too. I mean, I'm not saying noticing is the magic sauce to everything. But if we create value all along the way, it's easier to get to that greater value. And I'm going to stop there because I just threw a lot at you at one time and I didn't realize I was even going to talk about the value creation framework till I opened my mouth.
No, fantastic. But what does that look like in practice? So are there specific steps that you follow or what can people expect when they start working with you?
Well, first of all, it's really lovely. I'm retired from paid work, so they can expect a lot of annoying behavior on my part. Like, why are you doing that? Why are you even bother doing that? I mean, sometimes I get in there and say, like, you don't want to do strategic planning. You want to have a plan. That's not strategic, or it could be strategic, but they're two different things. So, you know, for those of us who work with groups, individuals, I have to do a plan for myself. Yes, it's true, even at a personal level, is just stop and figure out why you're doing it. And if you're rubber stamping, just tell everybody you're rubber stamping, okay? That may be the reality, but don't waste my time. I'm not going to waste your time. Let's not do it. So I think it is not contracting in the contract, in the consultant speak, but contracting in, here's what we're going to do, and here's why we're going to do it, and here's how we can adjust it as we go if we need to. So that's the first part. It reminds me of like when people used to hire me to do consultations. And pretty soon I realized they didn't really care about the consultation. They just had to do it. And they were going to do what they're going to do anyway. And they were taking away ownership of the work by never even including the ideas of the people they were consulting, recognizing that the people own their own ideas. You can't appropriate them. So there's a lot of systemic things you start poking when you start talking about strategic planning. But let's get specific. So I like to use this approach that emerged from the Liberating Structures community and other people before us, right? So David Sibbett at The Grove, I would say, is one of the seminal ideas, person whose ideas were part of not working. And it was experimented with in lots of forms. And as we iterated with it, we realized it's the six questions that we ask that form the basis for developing a strategic, I don't want to say plan, it's almost a strategic way of being, a strategic way of acting, a strategic way of noticing, a strategic way of adapting. So not working itself isn't a strategic plan builder. It's a strategic muscle builder, right? It changes the way we see our work and allows us to interact together to improve that work. And that then immediately throws everything we used to do out the window is, you know, what's our goal? Who's going to get it done by when? I mean, that stuff's fine. When you know what you want to do, use purpose to practice, right? You know, who needs to be involved? What steps are involved? Let's just go frickin' do it. But when you're dealing in uncertainty or complexity, you can say, this is the direction I want to go. But you're not even that sure of that direction. So you have to take a step. You have to take a step and you have to know why you're taking the step. So the six questions start with, what is the purpose of my work? So why does it matter? Or the purpose of our work and exploration. And often people walk into a room thinking they know what the purpose of their work is. And until they explore that question, you're not going to get very far. And it's a good probability they'd walk out with a different purpose. I was working with a group of researchers and practitioners in a healthcare field. And we were invited in to help them develop a strategic plan. And I was a subcontractor on this. And I said, well, let's try this thing called not working. And we started with EcoCycle, which is a way for people to see where they're at any moment in time with an initiative in terms of capabilities, relationships, resources. And this group first ecocycled their departmental level stuff, and then we put it together into a big ecocycle. And for those not familiar with ecocycle, ecocycle allows us to look at our work in terms of four main domains. One is maturity. We know how to do it. We can keep doing it. We can reliably get outcome. The second domain is a creative destruction. So we may have been doing things forever in maturity, but they're no longer delivering any sort of value, and we need to blow them up. We need to take them out of the repertoire and make space for what's new, or maybe even just make space. And then the third domain is the place of networking or idea generation, where we're imagining new possibilities, new futures. And then that moves into birth, where we experiment until we can get something, we move it back up to maturity. And if you look at the visual, it's an infinity loop. And between the ideation and the birth, often we get stuck in the scarcity trap. Oh, we don't have time to do that. We don't have the people to do that. And between maturity and creative destruction is, we've always done it that way. I'm going to stick in my comfort zone. I'm not going to move it to creative destruction. And within this ecosystem, we can also see where we sit. Well, I'm always there complaining about things. Maybe I'm the agent of creative destruction. And if I could be used more positively, I can contribute to the team in a new way. Or if I'm the ideator, but I never get anything done, I need to be matched with people who could say, I can take that. I can prototype it. You know, So you begin to see the ecosystem of your organization. And when you look at your purpose for your work and you map it there, what do we know how to do? What do we need to blow up? What do we need to think about anew? What do we need to prototype? All of a sudden, you can see your purpose differently. So, God, it was, I don't know what year it was, but Fisher Qua said, not working is just a different way to work the ego cycle. And I found that was like, oh, yeah. Because every story I told about doing not working started with breakthroughs of seeing work in a different way by looking at ecocycle. So this group of researchers, when they put their ecocycles all together, they realized they started out as innovators of this new way to work in the healthcare system. People recognized the value, and people started throwing money at them in order to train people to do this new way of working. So they went from a research and an innovation group to a training group. All the money came to the training group. So the research and innovation group kind of receded into the background of getting the next grant that keeps the institution open, which is a training grant. And the first discussion about their purpose was actually very difficult, because most of the people worked in the training area and immediately thought, you know, this is the end of us. Well, as they worked the questions, they began to realize that they needed to offload the training into its own subset, because it was a revenue generator, but more importantly than that, it spread the practice and rededicate to the research side of things. And then they started figuring out how to do that. And everybody's blood pressure came down a little bit, because it wasn't about blowing them up. It was very much about creative destruction, but it was about realigning resources and talents. And they could then explore the subsequent questions that we ask in not working. And I'm going to take a breath here, Johannes, because I haven't explained it yet in its fullness, but I'm wondering what you think, we should stop and do that, or maybe you should do that.
I think we should definitely get into the next steps. I think it's great that you dedicated so much time to purpose, because that's also my experience, that I was kind of blown away by this in the beginning, that when you actually start looking at this, how deep this question goes, and you would assume that the people present in the room have a shared understanding of it. And in reality, this couldn't be farther from the truth, in my experience. So I think we should really pay attention to purpose and make sure that this is the foundation that we start off from to then ask the next questions, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I tell people is, when we start with purpose, is this is a placeholder. Because as we explore the next questions, oh, that's not exactly what we meant, or that is not at all what we meant. And they discover new purpose, and we hold that legitimately as uncertainty is part of a strategic planning process in a complex context. It is not a deviation. It is not a distraction. It's not a problem. It is an opportunity. And I think when asking the questions for people to engage in this process, you are asking them to step off a little cliff because they don't know what's going to happen. And that makes some of us ecstatic and giddy. We love it. And other people, it's terrifying.
Right.
And sometimes it's threatening. So I think we need to hold, as those of us who introduce the process, is that we need to maybe sometimes take care of people's reactions to things that can be traumatic. So you're holding the space over here. So let's slow down here, but let's get to the next step. So the next step, it's funny, when we first started playing with not working as a community of practice, there's probably a dozen of us who met monthly. And the order of the questions has shifted. And we've moved to the second question being, where are we actually? Where are we starting actually? So this is, again, where the eco cycle can become a container to hold people's observations of where we are. So, you know, what are our strengths? What are our assets? It's stuff that you'd actually find pretty familiar in a traditional strategic planning process, but framed with this idea that it's not black or white. There's this continuum of our resources. So where are we starting honestly is the second question. And we use EcoCycle to do it. And again, where are we starting in our purpose may be very aligned, or they may be like in two different planets and going like, how did that happen, right? Or nobody knows what everyone else is doing. So when I've done strategic planning with multiple subgroups for the larger organization, when they share their EcoCycles, it's like, what are you doing? I didn't know you were doing that. Or, oh, I could help you with that. Or, oh, could you help me with this? Or, oh, we're really stuck in a model that actually has nothing to do with our current purpose. So, you know, by this point, people's minds are kind of going like, this is not what I expected. So, and when you introduce this approach, expect surprise. So you want to say anything else about the second question before we move to the third one?
Fantastic. Let's get to the third one.
So the third one is, what is happening around us that demands change? And this is the outward-looking question and the inward-looking question. Some people sometimes think it's just all, what are our competitors doing? Or what's happening in policy in our country that would... It is also about what's happening around us. Aging workforce would be one of those classic internal views. Or one of the things we're seeing a lot in organizations, the missing middle. There's the senior people and the junior people and all these other people who have been let go or moved on because they were frustrated. And that totally changes how an organization operates, because often this middle part is where knowledge and practice gets exchanged. These may be people are senior, but they can't mentor everybody, right? So, you know, we can look and see what is demanding change in that. And those may have come out of the eco cycle and the purpose. So again, we're backing up to purpose. Do we need to recheck that? Oh, let's add that to the eco cycle. And I think here it's when the eco cycle begins to be a place to visually capture the insights that are emerging from the conversations. And so I often put the eco cycle in the middle of a big mural board or paper on the wall if I'm face to face. And we use it as a data collection point, and we use post-its because our interpretation of the data changes the deeper we go. So where we thought something was immaturity, it was actually stuck and it needs to be moved to creative destruction. So we begin to layer the information and use that visual piece to begin to build a narrative of what we're doing. And I know you have a question about narrative, and I don't know whether to bring it up here or to hold it till later. But to me, this is where the storytelling plays a role in sense making. So I tell the story of what is demanding change. You might tell a different story. And then it gives us an opportunity to either reconcile that or hold it as a difference. And one of the things about strategic plans is if we think it's all about acquiescence, agreement, bow down to the source of authority, we're going to get ourselves into a narrower and narrower trap. But if instead we can hold that dissent or disagreement or different points of view through the process, we may begin to see where it fits in the eco cycle as a productive force rather than a dividing force. So again, we're trying to like move forward and hold some of this unknown stuff in our hands at the same time, which will make people squirm, you know, And I don't think squirming is bad. I think it's a productive way. It's a pressure valve to help us understand what's going on underneath. So if everybody's, you know, holding back and looking a little panic, well, you think, oh, there's something to discover here. It's not a problem to be solved. So we've done 1, 2, 3, right? Purpose, baseline, what demands change.
Right. On the topic of context, my experience is that I'm constantly surprised by how oblivious lots of people and organizations are to the context, and that I often actually invite them before we do any kind of strategy session to start thinking about what is going to influence their work. Do you have the same experience? Or because I noticed that it's difficult for people to come up with these insights on the spot because they often have never done it before.
For me, it varies by context. There's some groups that are more attentive to context than purpose. And there's some groups that are more the opposite or any of these things. So it's figuring out where they are. But, you know, there's one thing. I love to use TRIZ when context feels stuck and they're just kind of giving the obvious, well, AI is on the rise. Okay, yeah, so what, baby? You know, what does that mean to you? What is the impact on you? Who's doing it? Who do you want to partner with? We use creative destruction instead. It's called creative destruction now, not TRIZ. I should learn and, you know, what's in the
yeah,
book,
me too.
Right? Buy the book, Nancy. And when you ask people to design for perfect failure, all of a sudden they notice context in a new way. So you can use, you could do a round of creative destruction where go back to that list and see what is the context that would make that happen. So you can use iterations to surface stuff. And I think one of the things that constantly surprises me is you can do not working, a strategic not working, just using 1, 2, 4 all, you know, first alone, then in pairs, then in quads to understand the pattern in the answer to the questions. Or you can bring in other structures and that's great. What seems to be true, whether you use one structure or a handful of structures, is sometimes repeating the same thing over again, either with the same prompt or with an adjustment of the prompt, is the place where something can get unlocked. Because we tend to go to the obvious, the safe, or I want to prove you how smart I am response, right? Which aren't necessarily getting into the substrate. So doing it again, let's do that again. Let's see if we can go deeper. And it can unlock things. Again, it can annoy people. And I think I didn't realize this until we're talking about this, is that not working can be very annoying because it taps into things that trigger us to respond and maybe in ways that either surprise us or uncomfortable. And I think it's okay to tell people that this can be uncomfortable or annoying. It's like, why does this have to be like sweetness and light all the time? Sometimes being able to tap into that friction is what we need to do. So I think there's this interesting dark side of not working that I find very attractive if we can hold it with an open attitude and a playful attitude. So you can have fun and be uncomfortable at the same time.
That's funny. That's also what I started telling people. That it's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to feel messy sometimes. And then it's going to be productive at some point.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have purpose, baseline, context. What's next?
Yeah. Okay. So that's 3. So 4 is what challenges or tensions do we have to face? And there's a number of ways to frame this. And I always mix up my language, so forgive me for being inconsistent. It's the privilege of age, I think. It is, where are there 2 very true but opposing facts or conditions that we're facing with? What are the challenges that seem so gnarly and so twisted into a giant hairball that we don't even know where to start with them? And typically, identifying those areas of challenge, again, could be, it's a theme, it's uncomfortable. But it begins to change how we see the world. And basically, we're expressing the challenge in a new way, or possibly a new way. And in liberating structures language, we often use wicked questions. But there's a lot of ways to crack that nut. And I find at this point, because that people have eco-cycled their work to understand their baseline, they've looked internally on their purpose, externally on the context. This is when the results begin to have them go back and look at the purpose. Oh, our purpose isn't to keep being a giant training institute. Our purpose is to spin that off to a group that is in the business of training, and we're going to develop the next wave of what needs to happen with these practitioners. We're going to rededicate ourselves to research in a way that can always be linked to practice through the training institute. So in fact, you're building the next level of collaboration that will take the work further rather than saying goodbye to training or goodbye to research. They become two separate but intertwined things. And that came out of Wicked Questions, right? This came out of, you know, the reality of what's around us and the huge ambition of our purpose, which is to change people's lives, right? So to me, this is always a turning point. And sometimes for me, the most challenging one to be hosting, because sometimes I find we step into a wicked question and it is a distraction. It isn't the point. So I'm kind of curious how you handle this one.
What I'm noticing is that the questions that we usually avoid is the ones that we need to tackle here. And that we come back to this feeling of not being comfortable, because most people I work with, they, like you said in the beginning, they kind of want to jump straight to what's the plan, what do we need to do, but they've been evading all these questions for a long time. But that's where all the power lies, right? So if we actually make progress on these questions, or just acknowledge that maybe there's something that we can never fully solve, that we just have to navigate all the time, then suddenly there's movement that becomes possible, or it kind of just unlocks possibilities for the group.
Well, and then you've got to question five, based on what we've learned, what is now made possible? And that's not the first question we ask. It's the fourth question we ask. And leaders often want to get to that right away, right? What could we do? And what are the first steps? And those are really important questions, but they have to be grounded in a fuller understanding of what we want to do and the conditions within we want to do it. So step five is like this moment of breath for me, right? We're kind of holding it in. We've gotten all these tough things, and now we get to play with what might be possible in an expansive way, in some ways, a low stakes way. Just imagine what we might do. Go beyond that. You know, like we're going to put the product on the shelf by Thursday. Go beyond that. What does that look like? And to me, this is a point where either you have a really clear trajectory for a plan emerging, or really clear that we don't know where we're going still. And again, this may be a doubling back or rethinking or restructuring about how we do this. And I think this is where Not Working got itself stuck a number of times, is people felt they had ideas and maybe, you know, a sense of going forward, but it wasn't a plan. It doesn't say who does what by when. And to me, that's an indicator you're in a complex context, because you can't predict the future. You can only do safe fail experiments towards that future, right? And having a strategic plan is an idea that we have, that there's clarity all the way and there's steps all the way. And, you know, it's like a Gantt chart. We know when everything's going to happen. And if you're working in a complex situation, that isn't going to be the truth. So one of the things I say about Not Working is, if you have a very simple problem, don't bother doing Not Working. Go do purpose to practice, right? It's just about organizing work rather than thinking and being strategic. And when you get to question five about what becomes possible, we want to begin to think about how we're creating value over time, right? We want to actually not just think strategically during the retreat, but we want to become a strategically acting and thinking organism. And this probably goes back to how we contract of what we get out of this process, and how we bring people along so that they can begin to breathe into the space of, there's many possibilities. I need to choose some, and then I need to check on them and go back. And I think this is where the concept of developmental evaluation starts permeating into not working. And it also ties back, should you love the Wenger Trainer Value Creation Framework, it gives you an actual developmental evaluation tool to use. But question five tells us, what should we start with now? What experience would you start? And then question six is, what are the first steps? Like, who does what by when? And how will we know we're making progress? And by building the developmental evaluation question into the actual plan, we are giving ourselves the track ahead of us to adjust where we're going and get into that maybe unpredictable space with a little more comfort and strategic capacity to learn from it and adjust as we go forward. So if you're just making widgets, use something else. But if you're in that complicated space, you've developed ideas. So we're going to split off the research and the training institute. What's the first step that has to happen there? And all of a sudden, we have to renegotiate our relationship with the university. And we need to begin to build new relationships with training institutes. And all these things that were like not even on the radar screen begin to pop up. And then you ask, how will that move us towards our goal? And there's a trap, you know, let's go back to the comfort of being the training institute, right? We need our creative destruction there really strong enough to get us through there. How are we going to check on that? So every time there's a new grant, are we going to apply for it? Are we going to co-apply for it? Are we going to hand it to the training institute? And those become very concrete strategic steps. There is a concrete plan there, but it's not a plan for everything. It's a plan for the next phase. And then to check, is that still taking us to our purpose? Is our purpose shifted? And all those things begin to be possible, but not freaking out, Lee. Too many things to deal with, right? And then you can go back to your eco cycle and reassess where you want to go. You can use that to help chart your next steps. You could use your eco cycle to check 6 months in, are we making progress? You could use your value creation framework after every major meeting. You begin to have things that help us see, did the step I design, is that the step I want to have? And this is the difference between having a complete plan in the traditional sense, like for the next 3 years, this is what we're doing. This is not going to deliver that to you. This is going to deliver you your direction and your way to make sure the direction's adding value to your purpose and adjusting along the way. So it is not a strategic plan. It's a strategic way of being. And I think that is, to me, a fundamental. It took me a while to figure that out for myself.
But this question of how do we know we're making progress, and also the question of what's the first step, that already kind of points at the iterative nature of strategy not working, instead of this linear, we'll just set a plan and we'll just assume it's going to work and we don't need to change anything, right?
Yeah. And then what I have people do at the end of a session is tell the story about what happened by walking through the questions. And they go like, I don't know. They stand up there, you know, they start talking and they're using the eco cycle and they're looking at, and all of a sudden, a narrative of their understanding emerges. Not a narrative of the plan, but a narrative of how they are moving towards a more strategic direction for their work and how they're going to get there. And sometimes it takes two rounds of storytelling, but there's something between the seeing and the talking that has always surprised me and delighted me when I've run this with groups. And sometimes the first time we did it, it like shattered so many things. They had to quickly go back and run the six questions again because they had the insight in that moment of meaning making. It was like, yes, I get carried away, Johannes. I'm sorry.
It's beautiful to see you get carried away. I like it. We should definitely maybe set up another session for multiple hours just for you to get carried away. I did have more questions. You basically just answered one, because I noticed that often in the strategy planning or the whole process of strategy creation, what people are kind of looking for is some form of narrative that just sounds good, or it might be so harmless that no one can say anything against it. And you already captured how the whole process is kind of designed to create a substantial narrative. But is there anything else that you do when you notice a group slipping into this habit of this performance theater kind, you know, this will make it sound good, or it's just kind of this wishy-washy corporate speak? Do you have any techniques for grabbing a group and making it more substantial?
Well, if they're really falling back, or as we love to call it, snap back into their old habits, a creative destruction is a really, I can tell you stories after stories of people denying about that this is happening. And then the minute you do creative destruction, that's exactly what they're doing. And they've named it, right? I think sometimes it's a matter of working with the leader and saying, we contracted to this approach. I see you falling back into the safe space. Is that really where you want to go? Do you want to be held accountable for that safe space? And I'm not talking about psychological safety of space. I'm talking about, you know. And sometimes that works, because it is often the fear of the leader or the fear that people have of their leader that holds people back. Because why should I take this risk? Why should I jump off this cliff? You know, why now? Why me? Why now? Right? And I think that's part of it. There's a fabulous quote. I was on another call last week, and I was talking to two facilitators, and I was in a gathering of senior OD people at a university in Ohio many years back, and I was graphically recording. So I was mouth shut, ears open, which is really, if you know me, it's really important because sometimes I just talk. I'm one of those people who thinks by talking. So I'm sitting there, you know, graphically recording. Peter Block gets up in front of the room. He doesn't say anything, just stands there, and then he goes, if this meeting were to be a failure, what would be your role in that failure? And I remember, if this meeting, you know, writing away, blown, mind totally blown. And yet that is the question.
Mm.
What responsibility do we all have? Not just to the leader or the facilitator, quote unquote, or the consultant or the dominator, but what role do each one of us have? And not working answers that question. We all have a role in our failure or our success, or I think more importantly, what we learn and how we improve along the way, because there's always failures and successes. And sometimes from failure come the most important insights. So it's rethinking from strategic plan to strategic being.
Period.
Period. It was a strategic silence there.
Okay, one more thing. So you mentioned in the beginning the purpose of strategic planning. And when I ask organizational leaders what they want to achieve with some kind of strategy process, they often say, I want everybody to pull in the same direction, or we want like full alignment. We want everybody to be on the same page. Is that realistic? What is the experience here? Is this full agreement, is that even desirable? Because you mentioned sitting in discomfort for a bit. How do we handle this tension of actually wanting some form of alignment and not, you know, the group not completely pulling different directions, but also having these disagreements alive in the conversation?
Well, first of all, I'd say alignment is a principle, not a plan. And seeking alignment doesn't have to mean agreement, right? It can mean in our alignment, here's the areas we disagree. In our alignment, here's some areas we're uncertain about and need to challenge our thinking in a different way. And this is when you look at, again, on EcoCycle, the domain of creative destruction. Instead of calling it whining and complaining, call it discovery of what we need to think about differently. You know, what if we blew that up? What would happen? What tiny idea could we have around that? What kind of experiment can we have around that? And all of a sudden, disagreement becomes a tool of learning and improving. But if you're the person who's noticing that problem and you've been squashed down so many times, you either shut up or you become a pain in the ass or you get fired or you leave, right? But instead, if you're seen as like some of our secret sauce is because Nancy notices when it's not working, right? So Nancy, I want you to notice the very moment when it's not working and call it to our attention, right? It becomes a completely different game. So we're in alignment towards the success of the group, but we're not necessarily in alignment in every way because that may be a blind spot, right? Hmm. So I think along with the fact that alignment is a principle and not a destination, is we also have space for discomfort and disagreement. And we can be aligned around that, you know? It's just about, it's a reframe, actually.
What is a small thing that anyone, or especially organizational leaders, can do tomorrow, next week, that drives them a bit closer, or gives them the power to start with more collaborative strategic process?
Ask them to not work their own leadership.
Oh, no.
And either you're going to gain a huge, huge ally and you're going to work together and amazing, or you're going to, the person's going to go, this is not for me. Because that's the, when people want everyone to have buy-in, right? What is buy-in, right? Is it skin in the game? Is it being heard and hearing other people? It's rethinking, you know, what we think is agreement into a place of shared ownership of moving ourselves towards our purpose and working in lockstep to something that may or may not be working.
This has been exquisite. Thank you so much. I think we covered 2 or 3 of my 15 questions, so you will have to come back.
It was a gas. I loved it.
Where can people go to find out more about you and your work?
Well, the Liberating Structures Field Book, which came out in June, and you can find it at liberatingstructures.com, would reflect the Liberating Structures point in. I have a very old-fashioned bloggy website that actually is pretty defunct, and I'm trying to, so maybe somebody could help me figure out what to do with it, because it started with my work in online facilitation in the late 1990s, when online community meant all text-based community, might I add. I probably, you know, write 1 or 2 posts a year now, but that's at fullcirc.com, and that will give you a sense of how random and nonlinear my thinking is.
Fantastic. Nancy, thank you so much for being here. Like I said, we'll have to do this again.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
I hope this session has given you some concrete ideas for your own transformation challenges. At Holisticon, we provide companies with holistic support from strategy and technology to organizational change. If this sounds interesting, please feel free to contact us. You can find all the information you need at holisticon.de. And please don't miss our next Transform Together session. I'll see you then.